Every once in a while, we'll have an opportunity to meet with personally or talk with someone over the phone about their disorientation in life, their lack of direction, their misdirection in life, aimlessly wandering around, not really aware of where they want to go or what they want to do or even what they believe. And yet probably many of us have been along that very same road, unsure of what we believe, searching for fact and figure and scripture to support what we're going to do in our lives. I know just recently we had a phone call from Jesus Christ. You all didn't know that, did you? I say that seriously. It was not Jesus Christ, but it was someone who thought he was Jesus Christ. He actually had two or three names, one of which was Jesus Christ, and it just so happened that I was rather busy, so I asked Mr. Van Stinson to take that call, which he was happy to do, and I think he learned all sorts of things that he maybe can tell you sometime in a message. Well, this person that he talked with, and I talked with just ever so briefly, was terribly disoriented. Wouldn't you agree with that? Now, come on, let's be real honest about this. Don't you think so? Anyone who would call up and believe that he was Jesus Christ, and I believe he also was Elijah, and maybe even one more. But that's good enough. If you're going to be two, you might as well be Jesus Christ and Elijah. But this fellow was really aimlessly wandering around religiously, unsure of what he wanted in life. One of the questions that we are often asked by folks who call in is they ask us about our way of life, what we believe, what our churches are like. Now, when someone asks you that, what do you normally respond? Do you have an answer that you can just in your mind perhaps go over quickly? If someone says to you, well, what does your church believe, or what are you folks all about? Why do you attend church with the Church of God International? Do you have an answer, one that you're comfortable with, or you just sort of sidestep it? I imagine we've all been asked that question, so we've given an answer, and it probably varies radically from person to person. But the point is still there that we do give an answer, and what we say represents this way of life that we all share and enjoy in God's church. Some of these folks who call in, as I mentioned, need help desperately. They need answers to the questions. They need to know why they're here on this earth. You remember the old booklet of many, many years ago, Why Were You Born? I still have that one tucked away in several places, as a matter of fact. We might ask, what is this life all about? We're asked that. We'd try to answer that ever so briefly, or at least steer people to the local ministry, if that's at all possible to do. Have you personally ever felt that you were on a treadmill of just exhaustive disillusionment? Maybe not really aware of what you were doing or where you're going or the choices in life that you want to make. Have any of you ever been there where you just sort of get caught up in routine? And you don't step back and take a look at what life's all about and some of the good things of life, some of the great high points of life. I've been there. I'm sure you have too. And it's like being on a treadmill. Any of you ever run on a treadmill? You get up there and you just keep running and jogging and running and jogging. You just keep going and keep going and keep going and keep going until you just elect to get off or collapse, one or the other. Well, there are some people like that in this old world. There are millions of them out there who are on a treadmill that's leading nowhere. It's not leading to the kind of answers that are going to provide those folks with fulfillment. I read a little something I was not aware of at all, and perhaps some of you have heard of it, but there's a little creature that basically shortly after it goes through a transformation, it dies. And the reason why is it has no digestive tract. And that struck me just a little bit, because what basically happens is a little caterpillar. Maybe it's a big caterpillar, I don't know. But it's a little caterpillar anyway. And after it grows to a certain stage as a caterpillar, the eggs or the larvae are deposited, and it hatches into a moth. But the moth has no digestive tract, and so in just a few short hours, that moth dies. Just dies. I was reading a little analogy about that, and the analogy was drawn, I think, appropriately so, is or are our lives like that? Lives that really all of a sudden just have a single or maybe just a few purposes in life. Maybe just like this little animal, what we get caught up in is eating, propagating, and dying. I've known people who basically just eat, work, sleep. Eat, work, sleep. And in the meantime, have a few kids. And maybe a lot of kids. I talk with folks who are terribly discouraged. They don't know where they're going or how to get out of that routine. And then inevitably it seems that an opportunity for religion will come along, and then they can do something. They can step out of that routine that's going nowhere and begin to exact some changes in their life. Well, have you ever felt like you didn't know the reason for your existence? Now, I know we're all striving desperately to achieve God's kingdom. Now, let's not take away from that, because that's wonderful, it's marvelous, and we're going to be in God's kingdom. But in the meantime, I like to think about all of us as God's people who meet today and will meet next week and the week after that and the week after that, and they're going to meet at the Feast of Tabernacles. God's people who meet together in an attitude of joy, spontaneity, and worship. And that represents a way of life that you and I live when we come here. One of the questions that I come back with when people ask me about our church is I'll say, well, what kind of life do you folks live? If we're talking to a Seventh-day Adventist or a Jehovah's Witness or whatever they might be, just so I can get a feel from where they're coming from, I'll say, well, listen, tell me a little bit about your church and about what you feel. And normally that's all you have to do, and they're off and running, and then you just have to sort of step in and tell them, hey, well, do you want to hear what I've got to say? Well, I'll normally talk about our way of life, in God's church. Recently, it struck me just a little bit curious in attending a small church, one of our churches, that when I walked through the door of that congregation, it did not represent our way of life. Now, don't let me confuse you with that, but let me explain it just a little bit. In walking into the congregation, I noticed that there was a different atmosphere, a different attitude that existed among those folks. There were not very many, small in number. In pursuing it just a little bit, I began to realize that there was a lot of confusion. There was a lot of hurt. There was some little doctrinal disorientation. And there was a different way of life being expounded than what I know we're subjected to here in our congregation. And I say subjected to in a positive way. A way of life that, well, like last evening, if I might share this, I don't think Benny will mind me telling this on us. You know, this way of life that we live is a great deal spontaneous, don't you think? And don't you all enjoy this way of life? Don't you really? I hope you do, and if you don't, I'm going to try to help you enjoy it just a little bit more before I'm through. But I know last night, the Stinsons and the Sharps and the Mitchells and myself, we were all out to dinner. And it was just the right moment for everything to come back home. After we had a pleasant dinner, good conversation, and the hours were ebbing away, and Benny pulls out a tape and puts it in the cassette, and it was Amazing Grace. Now, can you get the picture here? Here we are. We're coming home. Benny turns the radio up, right, just like we're teenage kids again. Turns it up real loud. Have you ever done that? Well, probably if your kids, if parents, if your kids have done that to you lately, you probably said, listen, turn it down. Well, we didn't want to turn it down. As a matter of fact, I noticed, because I wasn't doing much singing, the others were doing all the singing because they're pretty good at it, although I did join in there at the very end because it was a thing to do. Amazing Grace. All of you know that song? Do you like it? Old Amazing Grace. Beautiful, isn't it? Can stir you to, I don't know, it stirs you to consider your soul, doesn't it? Well, here we were driving home from dinner, and I just was struck by the spontaneity of the whole occasion and how wonderful it was that we all, like teenage kids, could be sitting in there laughing and yet sobered by the beauty of that song. And old Benny was leading songs. You should have seen him up there leading songs as he was driving along. The fact that we almost got hit by a car should not be mentioned while he was leading songs, but he was leading songs, and I thought, well, there's our next song leader right there. You know, Benny's out there leading away, and old Vance Stinson, he opened up, you know how big a fella he is there, and just, he was singing along, and Amazing Grace, and Theresa, of course, he's taking voice lessons, was singing away, and I don't know if Nora was singing too. She was singing, and I was just sort of mimicking, you know. My mouth was moving, but nothing was coming out. But what a wonderful occasion it was. And, you know, that was made possible, at least I feel, because of God's church. And this way of life where we are comfortable to do that type of thing as close friends. You know, I want to do that again. I don't want to plan it, but I'd like to sing Amazing Grace like that one more time, or maybe two more times, and just to be a part of that occasion. Part of this way of life that we enjoy. Haven't any of you ever done anything quite like that, or maybe a little bit worse? Maybe more fun? It is fun, isn't it? Our way of life can be genuine fun. real enjoyment. And yet it's trimmed with sincerity. God's church is just filled and trimmed with sincerity. I read a book a good many, well, actually it's been about 2 years ago now, if memory serves me correctly. I'm not recommending it, but it was a book that still, the lesson is in my mind. It was entitled Atlas Shrugged. I don't know if any of you ever read that or not, but it was a book about philosophy. And I was reading the book, and it was all about the end of civilization in a sense. Civilization was trickling down to just human beings becoming almost basically robots, not caring about anything except the basic things that I have mentioned to you, the eating, the sleeping, and the working, and then the dying. And I was reading the book, and I looked at it, and I thought, boy, this is cold. Boy, this is filthy in terms of just there was dirt all around, and I thought, I don't want to have any, I hope the world is not in like this. I don't want it to be this way. And yet some of the attitudes that were talked about in this book were evident with people that I talked to. And occasionally, I find those attitudes in myself. Well, I hope we don't have to feel like we're living in a cold, metallic world that has no feeling and little excitement. Not as a way of life for all of us. Not in this church, and not in your church. Because it just isn't that way. I'd like you to see something over Luke chapter 24, if we can turn there to begin. Luke chapter 24. I doubt that any of us cease to be amazed at the frequency with which we feel or hear the name of Jesus Christ, either on radio or on TV, or we observe it on the bumper sticker or the bumpers of cars, or we see it on billboards. We see Jesus portrayed and mimicked in video, in movie, in book, in print, just everywhere. Well, here in Luke chapter 24, I want you to see something which I thought was rather interesting in reading this the other day. Over in verse 13, "And behold, two of them went that same day to a village called Emmaus, which was from Jerusalem about 70 furlongs. And they talked together of all these things which had happened." And we won't go back to rehearse all those events that had led up to the crucifixion of Christ and his resurrection. But that's what they were talking about. "And it came to pass that while they communed together and reasoned, Jesus himself drew near and went with them. But their eyes were holden that they should not know him. And he said to them, What manner of communication are these that you have one to another as you walk and are sad? And one of them, whose name was Cleopas, answering, said to him, Art you only a stranger in Jerusalem, and have not known the things which are come to pass there in these days? And he said to them, Well, what things? And they said unto him concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet, mighty indeed, and word before God and all the people, and how the chief priests and our rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and have crucified him." Of course, the irony of this, you just can't miss it, that Jesus Christ is actually involved here in this discussion. "But we trusted that it had been he which should have redeemed Israel. And beside all this, today is the third day since these things were done." Now, notice what it says over here in verse 25. "Then he said to them, O fools and slow of heart, to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory?" Well, Jesus was talked about here. The Bible, of course, is the history of Christ's life. Christ is talked about among us, isn't he? The Jesus Christ that represents this way of life that we follow. Well, many folks don't see Jesus as you and I see him. They just don't. Isn't that correct? They see Jesus as long hair or short hair. How do they see him? For the most part. They probably see him as a long-haired Jesus, don't they? Do they see him, as Mr. Armstrong has written in his book, as a you know, somewhat a strong, burly, kind of a masculine carpenter, or do they see him as something else? They see him as something else. Now, that Jesus represents their way of life. Now, he doesn't represent that for us, does he? It's quite a bit different. And you know, our perception of Jesus Christ affects our fellowship, our church, our joy. It affects our perception of God Almighty, the Father. Now, this way of life that we have is something that is extremely, extremely contagious, especially when it is right. And I want to talk about that, this way of life, because it's a sad thing. It is a sad thing, brethren, when you can go into a church, some of our churches, though few in number, and you can walk in and you'll know that this way of life is set back. And you'll see folks there who were all of a sudden caught up in the routine existence of getting up, making a living, going to church, and going home. Getting up, making a living, going to church, going home. And you do it week in, week out, week in, week out. And there's a whole lot more to God's church than that. I think it's expressed a little bit here over in Ecclesiastes, if you'll see with me there, over in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Ecclesiastes chapter 3. Notice in verse 1, it says to everything, I believe there was a song made after this, wasn't there? There was a popular melody that was developed from this. To everything there is a season and a time to every purpose under the heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, and a time to pluck up that which is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. It goes on to say here, verse 6, a time to get, and a time to lose. You might want to add a time in there. Do you have something you would like to add in those verses? I would like to add one today. I'm not adding to Scripture, all right? Don't take me out and hang me up afterwards. But I would like to at least propose a thought. I would like to suggest that there's a time to make a difference. There's a time to make a difference. And don't let other people make the difference for you. You make the difference. You know, if you're caught up in the restlessness of wandering around, uncertain of what life is all about, you have to decide to get off that treadmill. Now, I might be able to help you, but really you have to decide to do it. And if we can show and live a way of life that interests people enough, they'll see it, they'll want it, they'll desire it. I'd like to say there's a time to make a difference, a time to make a difference among God's people. It would have been so easy in this little group of people that we were meeting with, where there was this certain feeling of concern, an uncomfortable feeling because of the disorientation that I had mentioned to you, it would have been so easy to have changed that and to have solved it if just a few folks would have taken the time to make a difference. A time to make a difference. Let me ask you a couple of questions to see here if we can get a little bit of reasoning going. If I were to ask you what is more important of these two, which one would you choose? Is it more important to make money, or is it more important to be devoted to your family? Everybody knows how to answer that one, don't we? The answer is, it's more important to be devoted to your family. Some of you say, well, maybe if I can't be devoted to my family if I don't have money. Well, that's probably true. I don't want to take this out of balance, but I think in its purity, all of you would agree, it's more important to be devoted to your family. Now, isn't it interesting that the vast majority of we Americans would probably believe that and support it, and yet let's see if our lives support that belief. How is the average American pursuing his life? I can give you an example of a gentleman I worked with just recently back in Denver, terribly, it's not terrible talent, he was just terribly gifted, if you know how I mean that. Terrific salesman. And all of a sudden, one day, he was informed that he had some terrible family problems that were developing. And it looked like his wife was going to leave him. And he didn't understand why. He had two beautiful children. He didn't understand why. And I remember talking with him, sitting down, discussing it, because we were fairly close. And you know, the problem was real simple to me. The problem was he was never home. And yet he believed just what I said to you in choosing, that it was more important for him to be devoted to his family. He was a very devout Catholic, and he believed in that devotion. But on the other hand, he didn't spend time with his wife, he didn't spend time with his kids, he spent time just working and working and working and working. And you see what I'm saying here? I ask all of us to choose the most important of those two statements. We all said what's most important is we be devoted to our family. But the fact is evident, is the example I gave to you, that many of us do not really live by what we believe. You see what I'm saying by that? We believe it's more important to be devoted to our family, but we don't live our lives that way. We do just the opposite. Now let me ask you, this is a loaded question. What is more important to do on the Sabbath? To attend church or stay home? Oops. Now, I don't mean to step on anybody's toes, but let's be objective. What's the most important? If I were to say, choose one, what is the most important? To be at church on the Sabbath day or to stay home? We would all say, we'd probably come up with some excuses. Well, I'm sick. I want to stay home. Oh, it's too far. I can't get there. It's too much trouble. But really, if we just lay aside all the excuses and answer that question, we would say what? The most important thing is that we attend church on the Sabbath day. And I know that there'll be some along the tape program who'll be listening to this, and I know there are many reasons for folks not to be in attendance. But there are probably a bundle of us out there who, if we'd have just gone to a little bit of extra trouble this morning, just a little bit of extra trouble, we would be in church today on the Sabbath day. Because you see, it's rather hollow, isn't it, for us to make a statement of belief like I ask you to make. Choose whether you think you should be in church on the Sabbath day or staying home. And then, in fact, what do you live with that answer? Well, if you're going to live your belief, you're going to be in church, aren't you? You sure are. You know, I'd really like to see more people in church. That's our way of life, to be in church. It's a rather uncertain thing, isn't it? We don't know all the reasons why people do or don't come to church, but I would like to say something about that, because we've got such a wonderful group of people that attend church here. And I'm sure there are like groups everywhere. But it worries me a little bit that there are some who are under the water and baptized, have been for a long time, a part of the Church of God International, and right they should be, but they have not yet given our church a chance to show the right way of life. They stay home. You say, well, what's he talking about? Well, I'll tell you about the right way of life. It's fellowshipping. It's dressing up with the best you've got or whatever you've got. It's beautiful kids like this coming to church and having a Bible study class and program. It's refreshments if you have them available after church. It's the shaking of hands. It's the enjoyment of seeing someone you've not seen for a long time. It's going to a potluck like the one we're going to have a chance to go to today. That's this way of life. Yes, it's a little bit wrapped up, certainly, in our doctrines. We can't deny that. That represents this way of life. That produces what we share in common. That produces amazing grace, you know, after dinner, riding home, and everybody singing and Benny leading songs. That way of life. I want you to turn here to Philippians chapter 3 with me for just a moment. For those who are members of the church and perhaps not in attendance today, I'd just like to say, give us a chance. Give this way of life a chance. People come up with all sorts of reasons. They'll come up with reasons like, well, if I go there, it's not any fun. Well, how do you know unless you give it a try? Or unless you participate? Unless you get to be a part of that way of life? Unless you shake a hand? Unless you smile at someone? Unless you offer to pick somebody up and take them to church? Or you see a need in the church and you take the time to write a little letter to someone who you know is really going to appreciate it. And even if they don't, it's okay, isn't it? It really is. Philippians chapter 3. Notice here a sense of movement, what I call this, just a sense of movement, a sense of direction. The Apostle Paul was certainly not on a treadmill going to nowhere. He knew what he wanted in life and he was pursuing it. Here in Philippians chapter 3, over in verse 7, he says here, but what things were gained to me, those I counted loss for Christ. Yea, doubtless, and I count all things but loss for the excellency of the knowledge of Christ Jesus my Lord, for whom I have suffered the loss of all things and do count them but dung, that I may win Christ and be found in him, not having mine own righteousness which is of the law, but that which is through the faith of Christ, the righteousness which is of God by faith. Now in verse 10. That I may know him and the power of his resurrection and the fellowship of his suffering, being made conformable unto his death. There is a whole lot more, brethren, to our church life than getting up on a Sabbath morning and driving to church in your best clothes and sitting and listening and leaving and doing that week after week after week after week. I believe there's a whole lot more to our church life, to this way of life, than that. Give it a chance. Try it. You know the old saying, try it. You will probably like it. You will probably like it. You really will. Now, in verse 13, brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do. Look what he says here. Forgetting those things which are behind and reaching forth to those things which are before, I press toward the mark for the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. So let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And if anything be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this to you. So we have some rather mild exhortation here to do something, to get off the treadmill, to enjoy this way of life, to determine what way of life you want. For our churches, it's clear the way of life that we stand for. We stand for not eating pork. And that's this way of life. I like it, don't you? I like being able to go into a restaurant and not have to worry about ordering pork anymore. I just don't worry about it. You know, I don't worry about the bacon or anything like that because I just don't order it. I'm not confused with it. I had one man in one of God's churches, but I was serving there, and he wanted to put pork on the buffet line at church. He came up to me, and he said, "Well, I've got a novel idea." And I said, "Well, what is it?" And he said, "Well," he says, "I think that we should have pork on the buffet line." And I said, "You do?" I said, "We need to get together and have a talk." Now, actually, I didn't say that because he was a little bit upset, and we'd already talked about it. And you know what happened? He stopped attending church. And I'm sorry. I really am. I'm sorry he stopped attending church, because he could come to our church and not eat pork and eat pork when he goes home. But when you come to this way of life, guess what? As far as I know, we don't eat pork. Right? That's this way of life. Now, we've got a couple holidays that are going to come up this fall. This way of life is real simple. I don't have to worry about my little girls dressing up in Halloween outfits and going around like demons and witches. I don't make that choice anymore. That's not this way of life. The holy days are coming up. That's this way of life. Give it a try. How exciting that is for all of us as adults and our children. I want you to see something now which I'd like to share with you, just a thought and an idea, over in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. When the worldwide Church of God was as large as it is now, and we had large congregations, and I speak because that's my point of reference in pastoring some of those churches, we had an occasional problem come up, which is addressed here in 1 Corinthians chapter 12. I'm going to read it to you, and then I want you to see the reverse problem that we have today. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, it says this, verse 13. Actually, let's read verse 12. For as the body is one and has many members, and all the members of that one body being many are one body, so also is Christ. For by one Spirit are we all baptized into one body, whether we be Jews or Gentiles, whether we be bond or free, and have been all made to drink into one Spirit. For the body is not one member, but many. Now if the foot shall say, you remember these beautiful verses, if the foot says, "I am not the hand, I am not of the body." Well, let's read that. If the foot shall say, "Because I am not of the hand, I am not of the body," is it therefore not of the body? Good question. And if the ear shall say, "Because I am not the eye and I am not of the body," is it therefore not of the body? You know the answers to those questions, don't you? Now, what was the problem, at least in some of the churches I had dealt with in the worldwide, is that we had a large number of people to choose from. And everybody pretty much was trying to become a new part. Or they thought they were a particular part, and they weren't that part. Now, some of them were where they should have been. But I remember some people would come up. I remember one time a gentleman came up and wanted to give special music. He thought that was his part, which is fine and good. And yet, really, that wasn't his part. You know what I mean? That really wasn't his part. And we had to help him see that. But now what we've got in the Church of God International, to a certain measure, is this. We've got the parts out there, but it's difficult to get the parts to church. And it's sort of like running a race on a foot that's only got three toes. You can probably do it, but it could be a lot easier if we had all five toes, parts of the body. Or it's like listening with only one ear. It's a lot easier to listen if you've got both ears. It's like trying to throw a softball with two fingers. You can do it, but boy, it's a lot easier to have five, isn't it? You know, and we've got all these little parts out there. We've got little feet and toes and arms and eyes and ears and mouths and musicians and all these parts in our church. who just don't want to become a part of the body for whatever reason. For reasons like we're talking about, well, I don't want to go and it's a waste of time. And I know this is just a few, it's not very many, but to those few, I sure wish that they would give this way of life a chance. Give it a chance. Because, you know, if you're trying to stay away for the reason of pain at church, you know, it pains me to go to church. Well, I don't like that reason. It pains me to go to church. Because if you're going to get through life thinking that the way to all good things is to not have pain, then you are actually going to callous yourself to feeling, aren't you? You'll callous yourself to feeling. And when you do that, you are not compassionate any longer. And you're playing around with the love that you can have for your fellow human beings. And you lose a sense of awe. Now, pain keeps our feelings acute, sharp. Of course, we don't want too much pain, do we? Certainly, we do not. But it goes on to say here in verse 18, let's continue reading here. But now has God set the members, every one of them, the body as it has pleased him. And if they were all one member, they were, where were the body? But now are there many members, yet but one body. You know, we are really one body. But it sure is nice to have the body with all the parts. And God's the one who's calling the parts. And he's putting it together. And there may be someone out there on the tape program or in our church that you know of who's not here today who could have gone to a little bit of extra trouble and been the part that would have made an addition to our services today. This way of life that we enjoy. Some people say, well, I can't change my life. It's too late. He's asking me to go and participate, to shake hands, to be involved, on and on and on. That's right. Now let me ask you to do something. Just for a moment, think about it. If you want to do it, it's fine with me. I want you to write your own obituary. Can you come up with your own obituary? What would you say about yourself? You'd say, well, I sure wish you'd done better, or what, you know, what would you say? Wish I had more time, ran out of time. Well, let me tell you an example of a man whose name you will recognize who had the opportunity to read his own obituary. It was rather a strange set of circumstances, but what happened is he had a brother, and his brother died. And when his brother died, a local newspaper thought it was him. And so he picked up the newspaper and read what the local community said about him. Now, let me tell you who he was. His name was Alfred Nobel. Nobel Peace Awards, for music and fine arts. And you know what it did? Let me tell you what it said about him. Let me tell you what he did. So you think we can't change, we can't do something, we can't change the way of life? Yes, we can. He did. It was said of him that he was responsible for the creation of explosives that led to mass killing of human beings, destruction. And when he read that, it struck him that that was true. So you know what he did? He took all of his money, well, not all of it, but a great deal of his money, and he established these tributes to the arts. Because he said when he died, for real, he did not want to be known as a man who contributed to mass destruction and death and dying. He wanted to be remembered by someone else. So what I'm saying is maybe we can write our own obituaries just a little bit. You know, think about what you'd like to have said about you and maybe what would be said. And maybe they're one and the same. And perhaps that's the best way it should be, to be just one and the same. Well, you are a very important part of God's church, every single one of you. Everybody is. The little children, the grown-up kids, the real big grown-up kids, moms and dads and the grandmas and grandpas, all apart. They make it work. It's this way of life. Why gather together? I'd like to give you a little thought. A story is told of a couple of men, actually one, first of all, who was lost in the forest, out wandering around in the forest. If you've ever been in the forest, there are probably any number of ways out, and oftentimes it's easy to choose the one that doesn't lead you out. And he was lost. He was wandering around, and wandered around and wandered around, and just could not find his way out. And then guess what he did? He ran into somebody. And the person he ran into was lost too. And so they stood there together and they said, Gasly, we're never going to get out of here because we're both lost. And then they reasoned together and they said, you know what we can do? We can at least sit down and share what we have learned about the way not to go. And therein we will lead ourselves out. at least we'll better our odds. You know, a little bit of that goes on in God's church, don't you think, with people that you meet? You know, we come here, we sit and we talk, and we learn the right way to go. It takes time. It doesn't happen automatically, but it does occur. You can help show and live or lead people into this way of life. No sense for everybody to be lost. So people don't want to be, and sometimes they just don't want to be a part of the body, although they're a vital part of it. They can only be made aware of that. Now, I was talking to a lady the other day, long distance, way up in Maryland. I'd like to just share this with you. You think that the little things don't matter? I think they do. This lady is terribly, terribly alone. She really is. We were talking for about 15 to 20 minutes on the phone. She's probably in her, I'm going to say conservatively, in her 50s. And we were talking, and it was just so evident that she just yearned and ached inside for someone to just talk to her and to just show some concern. And I know that some people have responded to that. I know one of our churches, to show you how it works, to get one of our churches over in Tennessee, contributed some money to her. We didn't ask them to. They just learned about it, and guess what they did? They up and sent her a check, which helped her out. That's this way of life. I'm going to tell you something which should not shock you. I don't think it will. One of the things which is said about our churches is this. It's said that so many people come into our churches and so many people leave. We've all heard that, haven't we? Why does that bother us? I mean, it's something to be concerned about, but you know, our church is not the only church that loses people. Do you know that? Our church is not the only church that loses people. Because some people come here and they don't want this way of life. They just don't want it for whatever reasons. It concerns me, yes, that people come and go and they leave the church. And I wish it were otherwise. But it's not that there's something wrong with you and with me and with you and with you. You know, what's wrong with us? Well, maybe there's nothing wrong with us. Maybe there's just a whole lot right with us. And I like to think of it that way. There's a whole lot right. When you really get down to the crux of what I'm talking to you about, I basically am trying to encourage you to think about this way of life. Our way. It's God's way. We all believe in God Almighty. And yet we sometimes have to ask whether or not God would have us to lift our lives above the level of just existing. Just existing. Don't you think that God asked us to do that? To lift our lives above the level of just mere existence. To be a part, to be involved, to be on our knees praying, to send a letter, to send a card, to show some excitement, to extend a hand, to smile. You can think of all sorts of things that you would like to do. To cook someone a cake. Whatever you like to do. Go out and play a game of golf with somebody. Whatever. What is it that God does then that helps us lift ourselves above just mere existence? I'll tell you one thing he does. He tells us in his word how to live life. He commands us what to do. He leads us in his word. He tells us to live a life that is morally straight. He tells us to be obligated in virtue to one another. I like those kinds of things, don't you? That's a wonderful way of life when you can go up and meet someone and know that they're going to be honest with you. I like that. Do you like it? Sure we do. You don't have to worry about them lying to you. I think that's in God's church. I think it's this way. The next time someone comes up to you and asks you about your way of life, I want you to, if you can, just listen to them for a while and then take a few moments to talk about our way. And so my own personal feeling is I'm closing up here in the message. But you see, I tried one other way of life. I tried the Christmas and the Halloween and all those other things, didn't you? And I learned that I didn't want that way of life. Now, when people come up to me and ask me, and I know they're doing those things, I know I've tried it. I have tried it, and I didn't like it. When I got older, especially, I didn't like it. Now, people stumble with us and our doctrines, teachings, for whatever reasons. But you know what I normally like to try to encourage them to do? I'll say, listen, why don't you come with us? You can come. Come and try us. why don't you go to the Feast of Tabernacles and see the excitement of loading your children up in a car and traveling, or however far it may be, and see the smiles on their face and the wideness of their eyes and the laughter and the communication and the eating out in restaurants, and travel down to some beautiful place wherever you may want to go, and then compare that with the one we all compared it with, Xmas. What a way of life. Try it. Don't condemn it until you've tried it. Don't condemn us until you've tried it. Come and try our way of life. I want you to see now, quickly, over in Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. Again, going back to the analogy of the body and the parts, the brethren, the people. It says here succinctly, clearly, specifically, there is just one body, there's one spirit, even as you are called in one hope of your calling. This is over in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 4. There's one Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in you all. Now notice with me over here in verse 13. Till we all come in the unity of the faith and of the knowledge of the Son of God unto a perfect man, unto the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we henceforth be no more children, tossed to and fro, and carried about with every wind of doctrine, by the sleight of men and cunning craftiness, whereby they lie in wait to deceive. But speaking the truth in love, may grow up to him in all things, which is the head, even Christ. Now, verse 16. From whom the whole body, fitly joined together, and compacted by that which every joint supplies, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, makes increase of the body to the edifying of itself in love. The Church of God International is an expression of love. It is. It is an expression of love. It's an outreach program, if you will. It's what we are to become. That little church that I happened to stumble into, didn't stumble, I was there on purpose, to attend church. It's so sad that atmosphere of love and concern was not there. And I know, and after walking out of that service, I was talking with members of my family, and I said, you know, if a new person were to come to that church, they probably would not stay. They probably would not stay. They would go elsewhere and not come back. And I said, in a way, though, that's not fair, because they've gone to a service which is infected by the wrong attitude, and they leave not fully knowing this way of life. This way of life. So I guess it behooves all of us to sort of write our own obituaries, if you will, to be aware of the things that we can do, the changes that we can make, and in retrospect become something that we're presently not. I don't know. Maybe you're comfortable with where you are, and so that's wonderful. Let people come and join in fellowship and meet folks and enjoin them to come to God's church. The parts are here. The parts are out in the field, if you will. There are a few parts sitting at home today and should be here in church. Well, they'll be here one day. But for everybody in God's church, and the new people are going to be coming along, reach out to them, talk to them, exhort them, even plead a little bit. Try our way. It's a wonderful way to live life.